Okay. Good morning, everybody. My name is Jacob, and I work for Microsoft. It's great to be here in Australia. Actually, it's my first time to be in Australia, and I need to tell you that you couldn't pick better place to make a conference. This Gold Coast is pretty nice. I just went for a run on the beach yesterday. It was wonderful. You can find more about me on my blog, jj09.net. Currently, I work for Microsoft, and I work for Azure Management Portal engineering team. My blog is my personal blog. I mostly blog about stuff I'm doing overnight. So here you can see some blog posts about Xamarin. This is stuff, you know, I was doing at home. But I'm also blogging about some interesting things we are doing on the Azure portal. I live in the United States in Redmond, which is next to Seattle, which I think is one of the best places to live in USA. I don't know if you're guys big fan of hiking, biking, or just, you know, going around. And we have a lot of greens, we have a lot of trees, and we have one of the most fresh airs around the United States. And I'm also biking a lot. And again, Seattle is a great place to do that because we have this one of the largest bike rides from Seattle to Portland, which is 200 miles. In your language, it's 320 kilometers. And every year, it's over 10,000 people are doing this. So, you know, great place to be a biker. And we have, I think, like something like 500 kilometers bike trails all around the city. I'm also swimming. I'm also running. And I'm doing triathlons. And again, Seattle is perfect for that. So if you ever have a chance to visit Seattle, I encourage you to go for a hike, go for a bike ride, and maybe join some of the rides around. All right, so let's talk about Azure. So this photo is the actual Azure data center. I'm not sure if it's the Australia data center, but if it's not, it's probably very similar. And I am working on the Azure Management Portal, which is exposing the entire Azure cloud for you, so you can manage and create your resources. And let me maybe show you the portal. And actually, I noticed because we got a lot of bad feedback from Australia until we introduced the Australia data center. So now we, you know, our cloud is a little bit closer to you guys because the connection is, you know, not very good from here to the rest of the world. But I think we are getting better. So let's see how fast this will load. Are you guys using Azure every day? Who's using Azure every day? All right, like 80%. All right, great. Do you guys like the new portal better than the old one? Yeah. Yes? Nobody say no? Whoa, great. It's great to hear. Awesome. So, okay. So, my dashboard will take a little bit time to load because I have a lot of stuff here. Because, by the way, if you want your portal load fast, just remove everything from your dashboard because every, you know, tile is a bunch of separate calls. So, by the way, if you guys didn't know, if you double-click on your dashboard, you can change the background, which is, you know, pretty cool. We have like four different themes at the portal. I prefer the dark one. And you can also organize your tiles so you can, you know, drag them and move around. I don't want to do it because I have this perfect setup that I was working a long time to. Okay, so I don't want to mess it up. We also have a keyboard shortcuts, which is like another cool thing. And let me run this small program Karnak so you can see what keys I'm pressing. So like, for example, if I click B, it'll open my browse panel on the left, and then I can search for virtual machines, and then I can go to my virtual machines list. Or there's like one shortcut which I particularly like is G plus A, which will open all the resources blades. So let me close up this one. I click G and A, and I go directly to all resources. For me, it's much faster than, you know, moving your mouse and hitting on the all resources. So I prefer using shortcuts. So again, question mark, and you have all the list. If you want more, let me know. We'll be happy to add them for you. So let me close Karnak for now, because it will be annoying a little bit. Another cool thing we introduced recently is the multiple dashboards. So for example, this is my main dashboard with all different stuff like billing. We also have Here I have my database size because I'm running my blog on WordPress. And at some point, I noticed that WordPress is adding a lot of temporary entries to my database. And many times, I was exceeding the free 20 megabytes limit. And I was not interested in paying $10 for the paid version because I'm cheap and wanted to save some money. So what I did instead I created this web job that is cleaning these temporary entries every day, and I added this tile to the dashboard so I can keep eye on this, and now it never grows over 10 megs, right? So $10 saved, I can have two coffees, right? So that's pretty good. So another thing we introduced recently is the multiple dashboards. So now we can have, for example, here I created a dashboard for my blog, jg09.net, and here I have only tiles related to my blog. So like here I have some requests and errors. Here I have the availability, 99.81. Oh, it's supposed to be 99.9. So we'll need to investigate that maybe later. And also, here I have another dashboard for .NET ConfPL. This is online conference I'm running with my friends. And this dashboard is shared. So like you can see here, there is this icon. That means this is shared. So like if I move this tile around, let's see, maybe this one, I'll move it here. And I click Done Customizing. And then I click Publish Changes. Everybody who has access to this dashboard, or usually this subscription, and who I am sharing this dashboard with, will see these changes, right? So if you have a team of 10 or 20 people and you want to configure your dashboard, not everybody has to do it by themselves. You can like choose one guy and say, hey, look at that, I created this cool dashboard, do you like it? Yeah, sure, okay, let's share. And then this one guy can be updating it because maybe you're not very interested in that, and then everybody can benefit from that. And I don't know are you guys using App Insights on Azure? Oh, okay, like five people only. Huh. You know it's free. And it's actually pretty cool. So these beautiful charts, this is all from free App Insights, which is just, you just need to inject script to your site, and it's giving you all these cool charts. All right, so this is Azure Portal from the user perspective. And from developer perspective, all right, me back here, what we really are doing is my team is working only on front end. So what we are doing, we are trying to hide this complex and sophisticated Azure backend, so you don't have to worry about that, and you can just take advantage of Azure in very user-friendly and productive way. And on front end only, we have over 500 developers working, and we have, for now, we have almost 100 different Azure services running inside the portal, and we have different teams working on every of these services, like, virtual machines, like SQL, like application insights, like app services, so on and so forth. I probably don't even know over half of these services, what they do, and who is actually writing them. And another challenging thing we have is the Azure growth, which is pretty good, but it's challenging for developers because every year a number of our users double or even more. I think 2 years ago we have growth like 160% or something like that, and it's keep going like that. So because of these things, when we had the old portal, we have one monolithic front end, which, we still have like microservices on our back end, which was what most of the people are doing, right? You have one front end and you have different microservices on the back end. But this was not enough for us, because then when, we have this one front end and you have, at the time it was something around 300 people working on this, and you have many different services. When app service team wanted to change something, and then virtual machines wanted to change something, and then we had to like schedule the deployment to make it happen at the same time, and of course, bugs and bug fixing and all this stuff, it was getting harder and harder. And when we were adding every next service, it was getting more and more complex. So what we come up with was a new model, new distributed model that allowed us to have microservices on the front end. And this is how it looks. So we have a website, which is core of the portal. And we also have a framework that we expose to different teams that are creating these front ends for different services. And the framework, of course, talks to website. And every service is running in separate iframe. And for example, app service or virtual machines, and also SQL and our 100 other services. And they are talking to framework and through framework to the to website. So on the framework level, we make sure that, for example, if one service will crash, it will not crash entire portal. And by the way, every iframe here, it's only JavaScript code. And entire every DOM operations are happening on the website, and the iframes are communicating with framework using post messages, telling things like, for example, please open Blade, and then if user click on the website, we propagate this click back to the iframe. On the iframe, the, like for example, when we create new virtual machine, the iframe gets the call and it calls the backend, goes back to the portal and say, and it says to the portal, please show confirmation that virtual machine was created. And this is how it looks from a high level. So we have the portal. We have like this is an example of a TFS extension. So this is this hidden iframe here, and that communicates the portal. They have their own backend, TFS web server on this slide, and their backend is talking to Azure Public API's backend, and that's how this entire flow works. And on the portal side, we only have the URI to their endpoint. So they're providing us, so this is our backend. Please load this service on the portal. So we are loading it, and then we are sort of talking to them in a distributed way. So it's sort of like a operating system in the cloud. It's pretty cool. And we are using TypeScript, and TypeScript is a great language that, especially in our case, when you have a lot of developers and if anybody do change that can break potentially everything, TypeScript help us to detect that. So let me maybe really quick show you one thing. I'll open my, so let me make directory test, and let's open Sublime. So I'll create a new file. So for example, in JavaScript words, I'll call it app.ts. So when we have a function, let's say called hello, that takes two parameters, first name and last name. And this function logs this to console and say hello, say first name. Oops, I misspelled it. First name plus space plus last name. And then usually in large projects, this function is written by one developer, and then there is somewhere else in different part of the system, another developer is using this function, say, hello, Jacob, Jedrzejczyk. And you know everything is fine until we try to change something, right? So let me compile this really quick, and I'll run this. This one. Now I'll run this with notes. Say app.js. It say hello, Jacob Jedrzejczyk. So everything is great. Hope you guys can see it. But then you know one day developer one is saying, oh, you know, like we can improve that, right? Let's say that now instead of having first name, last name, let's pass the object person here, okay? So I would say person.firstname and then person.lastname, and let me format it so you guys can see it. And in JavaScript world, what would happen if I did this change in JavaScript, you see in TypeScript I'm getting this compilation error. In JavaScript world, I wouldn't, and what would happen in JavaScript world is hello undefined, what happened here? You would get hello undefined. So you might not even notice this thing, right? Because you don't get actually an error on the runtime. You just get this undefined, right? But in TypeScript world, when you do compilation, you get this big error saying, hey, your parameters does not match and it's not right. And then even if you try to fix this, like, okay, maybe I'm supposed to put one name. What will happen now? All right, now it compiled, right? Because I didn't specify any type here, right? But if I say here that I want this to be person, which will be class with first name, which will be string, and last name, which will be string, then I'll get another compilation error saying that, hey, you passed me wrong argument, right? And in this situation, TypeScript is extremely helpful. And this is like our first unit test that allows us to detect potentially breaking changes. We also use Knockout JS framework. Anybody is using Knockout here? All right, like 10 people. Good, good. So Knockout is it's pretty cool. You know, we started a project over 4 years ago, and at that time, Knockout was one of the leading JavaScript frameworks. And we were very fortunate that Steve Sanderson, the creator of Knockout, was working with us for 2 years. Now he moved to ASP.NET team, where he's applying all the lessons learned working on the large-scale web app, and he's trying to make life easier for every developer. So if you guys have heard about the ASP.NET JavaScript services that allows you, for example, to run your JavaScript front-end code on the back-end. So actually even people who don't run JavaScript, which is not the case, can take advantage of your JavaScript code and you can load your sites faster. And there's a bunch other cool improvements. So check it out. It's free open source on GitHub now. We also run jQuery, like every project, right? There's probably no project without jQuery. Is somebody who is web developer who is not using jQuery here? Yeah, of course, nobody, right? Yeah, that's not possible anymore. For our module loading and JavaScript lazy loading and module dependencies, we use require.js. We also use D3 library for drawing all these beautiful charts you could see on my dashboard. We take advantage of some features of HTML5, for example, local storage. This is pretty cool, but unfortunately, Safari in private mode still doesn't support that. So this is very unfortunate that we still have this limitation, even that HTML5 was introduced a long, long time ago. For managing our style sheets, we use Less, which is, again, a compiled CSS classes, which allows us to decrease number of CSS we have to maintain. It has nice things as nesting classes and features like that. It's very similar to SAS, if you're familiar with that. For JavaScript unit testing, we use QUnit, which is a pretty good framework. You can write unit tests. Execute pretty fast, and it doesn't have mocking framework, so for mocking, we use Sinon.js, which allows you to create mocks, allows you to spy on the functions, and has other cool features. On our backend, because we also have backend to serve our website, we use C# and ASP.NET at the time MVC 5. And also, some time ago, around 1-2 years ago, we started this experiment with running this separate services code that is running on iframe. We try to run this on the server side because many times what the service is doing in this iframe, like for example, when you try to create a new VM, it's like doing one call to billing API to ask the billing, hey, does he have enough credit to create this VM? Then he's doing another call to Azure Resource Manager asking, hey, can he create this VM in this region? Is this VM available? And then he's doing third call to actually create VM or even 4 and 5. So then we notice that, you know, this is like just going back and forth between client and server. And if we move this to the server and we run all of this logic on the server and then using WebSockets, we just communicate the result back to the client, it should be much faster. And it seems to be working. In many cases, it is improvement. And we call this relocatable extensions. So because we relocate the logic from the front end to the back end, and we did this using Node.js because you know we execute JavaScript and we mocked web browser basically on our back end to mock this behavior. For back end unit testing, we use MS test, which is okay. You can write the tests, but I would recommend you NUnit or XUnit. It's a little bit more modern framework. We also run Selenium tests for our UI tests. Like, if you go to website, you assert that, okay, site is visible, and you click on elements, so on and so forth. And for mocking on the backend, we use MockU. And as I mentioned, our project have a lot of developers, but it also have a lot of lines of code. And this is a clock app run on the portal framework only. So this is like the shell of the portal and the framework without the services code. And as you can see, we just exceeded 1 million of TypeScript, 1 million lines of code of TypeScript here, which is, I don't know if it's something to brag about, but this shows the challenges we are facing, right? Because we have a lot of developers, they are adding and removing this code every day. And we have something like 40 plus commits on the shell of the portal every day. If you want to learn more about TypeScript, there is a cool book, Learning TypeScript, but you would do even better move if you come to my session later today about building large-scale web apps with TypeScript. This will be like TypeScript 101. I will show you some cool things, how to use TypeScript with existing JavaScript libraries, and basically give you like overview of TypeScript today. So let's talk about our challenges one more time. So as I mentioned, one of our biggest challenges is to enable over 500 developers working on one code base. Because again, we have more than 40 different commits. We need to make sure that every developer is ideally running on the same environment. We also need to make sure that they are productive. So what we are doing, we have this Microsoft solution called CoreXT, which using environmental variables and NuGet is configuring your environment on your operating system. But unfortunately, you guys cannot take advantage of that. But you can take advantage of Vagrant or Packer, which is doing similar things. Like, for example, Vagrant can create for you the virtual machine that has pre-configured environment, and you can check in the configuration file to your source control, and then every developer can run the same environment on their machine. And so then, for example, if you compile something with TypeScript 1.9, but everybody is running already TypeScript 2.0, and you will push this code to your source control, you will break the code, right? And whose fault is that, right? So these tools can solve this problem. Another thing, if you have large code base, there is no way you can know everything about this code. Many times you need to do some changes in the code that you are not very familiar with. And then code reviews are extremely, extremely helpful because then people who are more familiar with some areas can give you feedback. Or also, like, if you're doing some risky change, there is very likely that there will be somebody who has some good feedback for that. So one issue with code reviews is when somebody is working on a feature for like a week and then he's sending this huge code review, right? And you're just happy writing code, and then he's like, hey, can you take a look, right? And then you look at this, and you will need like a day or more to check his code review. But what I figure out is the best way to do in this case is just go to this developer and say, hey, can you like sit together and can you like tell me what you're like really doing here instead of having me figure it out for half a day? And then maybe you will tell me like what decisions you had to make, because usually when you send big code review, you made a few decisions, like when you were like, should I do A or should I do B? Like it's 50-50, okay, let's do B, right? So then you go over these decisions and you look at this together, and then it's much, much faster. So I think code review is still beneficial in large teams. Another thing, I hope everybody is using Git these days. Is everybody using Git? Who is not using Git? Who is not using Git? What you guys are using? Sorry? TFS. How is this going for you? All right. Well, I mean, TFS is great, but if you're, again, working on big project, and especially if you try to create a branch, then you're probably not the happiest person in the room. In Git, this is extremely, extremely easy. Creating a branch is less than a second, and you can have multiple branches because Git is working on the differences instead of just having the physical copy of files. And you know, if you have, if your repo has, like, let's say, 200 megs, right? And to create a branch, you need to duplicate that. So strongly recommend Git, not only for big projects, but also for smaller projects. It really, really increases your productivity, and especially then model with code reviews, because you can create this private branch, you can work on this private branch, and then you can create code review out of this branch, or you can do pull requests on VSTS or GitHub. So once we, you know, once code review is done and we push the changes to our dev branch, then we run continuous integration. So we are using Jenkins for that. And here you can see we have a developer build, and then we are running unit tests. We are running a JavaScript unit test and C# unit test. We have a lot of different tests. And then, again, in large projects, it's hard to keep this green, right? Because there are 60 people, and it's very likely that two people will try to commit some code that has a little bit conflicting changes, maybe not compilation breaking changes, but some logical breaks. And then what we figure out, that we have like this rotation that every week we have one developer from the team who is our Jenkins CI ambassador, who is making sure that our CI is green. So he's basically going to people and, hey, like, because, you know, there's like five commits to went to the build and something broke. And like, of course, everybody's saying, oh, it cannot be me. It can't be me, right? Because like, come on, might change one line. Couldn't happen, right? So then there is this ambassador who is going like, you know what? Like, I revert your change. I run the build again and it's green. So I'm pretty sure it's you. And it's, you know, we are doing this rotation because if it was just only one guy, then his life would be miserable to, like, you know, having jobs of just chasing people. Nobody would like him. And that also can, you know, help you to your own discipline, because you know that one day you will become this guy. So you want to be nice for others. And if you break the build, this is what lands on your desk. And if you break tests, we have this. Unfortunately, that's my desk. But somebody else is going to fix this because I'm not there. So once everything is fine, we are starting release because we also have continuous delivery system. So how our release pipeline looks like. So we have a dev branch where we committing code every day. And we also have a dog food branch. And from dog food branch, we release like our internal portal environment. And every time when somebody pushed to dev branch and our CI, our Jenkins board is green, we merge the changes to dog food branch, and then we release. And we are using cloud services, by the way, to run the portal. Then we also have a branch called MPAC, which stands for ms.portal.azure.com. So I know it's not very intuitive. This is like version of the portal for Microsoft employees, and we merge our changes from Dogfood to MPAC every Thursday. It's Thursday because then after Thursday is Friday, so we have one day to fix this, right? You know, Friday is a very bad day to do releases, by the way. And then, again, we run tests and everything is fine. We release this to our ms.portal.azure.com environment. And then every Tuesday, after some period of stabilization in our staging environment, like every Microsoft employee already is happy with that, or they gave us feedback, hey, you broke this, or that we didn't have tests for. On Tuesday, we merge to our production branch, and we do a release to production, and that's even better, because from Tuesday to Saturday, we have over 3 days to fix everything we broke. So we're trying different things. We're trying to automate everything all the way up to production, but then we figure out that it's better to stabilize. And now we're also trying to do new release to different regions. So like we're doing it in steps. We don't release everything everywhere right away. We, for example, release to America regions first, then we release to Europe. And then usually we try to like release overnight. When there's a night in Europe, we release there. There's night in US, we release there. So we're trying different approaches there to make sure that the customers are not seeing many breaking changes. Our second challenge and the reason of many customer feedback is performance. Because, you know, when you have a lot of developers, everybody is adding code every day. And every line of code is slowing down your system. It doesn't matter what line of code it is, it always slows down, even if it's var I equals zero. And in our case, when the number of users is growing, and also project managers are adding more features, right? Because we need to chase AWS, so we need to have all the features they have. And by the way, we need to keep the portal load time the same, or even decrease this load time. Now we are around 5 seconds at the early load, and like at the slowest user are getting like 15 seconds. We want to keep it down until like 5 seconds. This is like our long-term goal. And to achieve that, we address many, many different tweaks. So number one thing to do for your website is, of course, minify your JavaScript. And this actually is a lot, because, you know, I'm first time in Australia, and I didn't know that you guys have limits on data on internet. And, you know, because I flew to Brisbane, and then I got to the train to Gold Coast, and I was very happy when I've seen that there is free Wi-Fi on the train. I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing, you know? So I started surfing on the internet, started seeking my Dropbox, started, you know, working on my presentations, and after like 3 minutes, this happened to me, right? And I was like, what, already? Like, and then they said, oh yeah, by the way, you can have internet again in 4 hours, right? So that was a nice lesson learned. And so let's see. Here I have this one small website. I think it's in here. So I'll run the server here. All right, let me open it. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, I can close portal. You need that. So I have this small website. When you go to the website, you have a button, get people, and it is fetching people, let's say, from my database. I have 3 people in my database, Jacob, Bill, and Steve. And when I click on video, it opens the video. And I'm using Video.js plugins. So I have like this beautiful player, and I can play the video associated with every user, right? So, you know, simple website, what can go wrong, right? So let me open F12 and network tab, and I will add throttling. And let's say I will say, okay, I'm running on 4G network, okay? And now I will do Control F5 on this website. And you can see that here, I download 1 megabyte for this very simple site, and it took me over 2 seconds to download it, when it should be something around half a second maybe, right? And when you look at the files I have here, so I have jQuery, which is not minified. I have underscore, which is not minified, right? So let me minify this. So I will go here. Let me open new tab. Let's require JS. I'll open VS Code. Oh, by the way, are you guys using VS Code? Who's using VS Code? Oh, only like 30%. Are you using like Sublime or other editors maybe? Sublime, some people. Try VS Code, you know, like at the beginning, I didn't really like it because Sublime was still faster, but now I almost totally switched to VS Code. It's a very nice editor, and you have a lot of basic plugins pre-installed for free, so you don't have to configure them. So really, really recommend you. So so this is my site. You know, this is the button. Here I have, never update your ID during the presentation. You know, I did it once before my presentation in US. I was presenting Aurelia Framework, and the result of that was that I had red squigglies over my every JavaScript file. So alert, don't do it again. Okay, so here I have this get people button, I have a people container, and I have also a container for video player, and I'm using jQuery underscore video.js, and here's my app, app.js, and it's not a lot of code, right? But if I minify my libraries, I should get a lot of network, right? So here I have a gulp file, and here I already have a task to minify my JS. So I'll go to console, I'll say gulp minify JS. Boom, boom, boom. That's only warning, no worries. And it will output the minified files to this directory. So I'll just update the path here to make it dist. I'll save that. The minification is done. I'll go back here. So we had 1.1 megabyte. And now if I refresh that, we get only 400 kilobytes, so three times less. So like, you know, in my case, when I was in the train, I was using Ethernet for 3 minutes. Now I could potentially be using it for 9 minutes, right? So that's good improvement. And we loaded in a little bit over 1 second. So it's getting better, right? So after you minify your JavaScript, a very natural thing would be to also minify CSS, which I'll do right away. Because here, if you guys have seen that in my gulp file, I also have minify CSS task. So I'll go run this, say gulp minify CSS. By the way, gulp is a task runner for JavaScript. It's very nice. There's a lot of plugins. You can compile your TypeScript. You can continuously compile your TypeScript on changes and do like a bunch of minification and bundling changes. It's pretty cool. So now I minified my CSS, and here on top, I just need to say this slash, and I'll go back here, and we get like another 7 kilobytes, and you see, now it's 1 second 20. We are starting from 2.5, right? So you're already two times faster. So this, two simple tricks, very important in Australia. Another thing is to lazy load your JavaScript. Don't load your entire JavaScript logic on the startup of your site. Try to defer loading as much as you can. And it, you know, really matters. Like, for example, in our project, I remember at the very beginning when we were, you know, starting this project, when we just wanted to make it work, we didn't worry about performance at all. We have like initial load size was something like 50 megabytes. And like, I remember like one friend, he did like slideshow from some company party that you could watch while the entire JavaScript is loading, you know. But that was pretty cool. But, you know, it's not very good when you want to release to your customers, right? So to lazy load your JavaScript, like even in my case here, if we take a look at this app.js file, oh, this is minified one. I want to see not minified, which is living here, all right? So if you look here, so I have this click handler on my button, and then I am, here, I don't really need more than just jQuery. So because I'm loading an underscore, which I'm using only here and here, and I'm also loading the video.js, which I'm using later on, right? So I can defer this loading. And to defer this loading, I'll use require.js. And require.js has another cool thing that is it will manage your module dependencies. So for example, as you can see here, I need to have all my scripts in the correct order, right? Because if I, you know, move one script, like for example, if I move my app here, and then if I try to load my site in the open console, you get an error because jQuery is not defined before I load my app.js. And then if you add more scripts, this is becoming an issue. So instead of doing this, I'll just use require. So I already have here require.js library downloaded. So I'll just say require.js. And here, I also have a require.js config file. So this is like standard config file you have to create for require, which you specify the base URL where your JavaScript lives. And now it lives in this directory because I'm doing this minification. And these are paths for my jQuery. So I can refer to this as jQuery, but actually I'm loading jQuery-3.1.0, same underscore and Vue.js. And then on application starts, it just loads my app module. So let me save that. And here I need to say data-main equals this slash JS slash config dash require. And I will save that. And now in my app.js file, I need to load dynamically the modules I need. So I'll say require jQuery and underscore and Vue.js. And here I need to add the callback function, and I'll refer to my jQuery in $r, to underscore in underscore, and Vue.js, Vue.js. And I'll move my entire code inside this callback function. So once the modules are loaded, please execute this code. All right, so I have it here. And now I need to run my gulp task again. So I go back here, I'll just say gulp, which will minify this changed file. It will also minify CSS, by the way. And to make sure everything is working, I'll go back here, I'll refresh it. And now I don't have any errors. Everything is loaded. Let's say git people, I'll click video. Okay, everything is working. So now the improvement I can do is don't load underscore and Vue.js until I click get people, okay? So I'll remove that. I'll also remove that. And I will move it here. I'll say require underscore Vue.js callback function underscore and Vue.js. And boom, and I will copy this code. And I will paste it inside here. And then you can also notice that I don't really need Vue.js library until I click on video. So I can defer this as well. So I remove my Vue.js. And here, once I click video, oops, they remove, okay. I say require Vue.js function Vue.js. And I just remove that, paste it here. And I load everything dynamically, okay? So now I will reminify my JavaScript. All right, go back here and control F5. And now you can see that my page load time is only a little bit over half a second, and I'm loading only 100 kilobytes. We start from 1.1 megabyte, so we have improvement 10 times better size than we had at the beginning. So again, in my case, when I was using internet for 3 minutes, I would be able to use the internet for 30 minutes. So I would be able almost to get it all the way from Brisbane to Gold Coast, right? And then when I click get people, you can see that underscore got loaded. I click video. And Vue.js got loaded as well. And actually, I forgot about one thing. I also could, because that was lazy loading JavaScript, but you can also lazy load your CSS, right? I'm loading CSS upfront, but the CSS in this case are only for the Vue.js plugin. So if I go to VS Code, you can see here, this CSS is for Vue.js, right? So I can get rid of this here, and in my app.js, here I can say, okay, when you load Vue.js, get my head and append these styles here, and let me just fix the quotations, oops, and this, and that. Okay, so it will load my CSS after I click on the video. I don't have it here anymore. And again, I run my gulp to reminify my JavaScript. Do I? Oh, where is that? Oh, in here. All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Let's do it one more time. All right. And so before. All right. So we get another few kilobytes. And now you can see here in network tab, my CSS are not loaded. So I click get people. And after I click video, then I should be loading. Oh, this is all. Sorry. Here, the video JS CSS got loaded after video JS. So a few simple improvement, right? And I decreased my initial page load time, load size by 10 times, and load time, I think, by 5 times, something like that. Another trick you should do when you have a lot of different JavaScript and when you load a few different files after, let's say, one user action, you should bundle them, because currently browsers in HTTP1 protocol are able to have only up to 6 concurrent connections. So if you try to load 20 different files, first it has to load 6, and then once they get back, it has to load another 6, and another 6, and another 6. If you bundle them, it is much faster. And the same with CSS. You also should bundle your CSS. Another thing is caching. And caching on client side is a little bit complex. So here are the 3 things that will help you doing client-side caching. It's e-tags, cache control, and unique URLs. And why do you need all 3? So what e-tag is doing, when you send the request to the server and you send the e-tag, this is like a checksum of your file. So the server can tell you, oh, you know, this file didn't change, so I'm not sending a new file, just use the cached version. Then you need also cache control, because when you have cached file with cache control, let's say 7 days, and cache is not expired, then you don't even have to do this request to the server, right? So the browser will just use existing file. But the problem is when you want to do the change, right? You want to change the file, and browser still have this cached version, so how to figure it out? You can have unique URLs. So if you do change, you just append the checksum of your file to the name of the file, and then on every change, you deploy new index.html with a new link to your updated script. And then, of course, it's requested to the server, and you get the new file on the change. And you might think that, okay, so cache control and unique URLs should be enough. Why would I need e-tag? So, you know, when your cache control is expired, let's say if you set it for 7 days or 30, when it's expired and you have a pretty large file, then if you do request to the server after that time and you don't have e-tags, you will get this file again, even if it didn't change. If you have e-tag, you will not get the new file. You will just get confirmation that, hey, this file still didn't change. And there's a very nice article on Google Developers website about HTTP caching, and everything like e-tags and cache control is explained here, so I really recommend you to check it out. This is a little bit long link, but if you just Google for HTTP caching Google Developers, you'll be able to find this site. It's a pretty interesting article. All right. So another thing, caching on the front-end side is important, but also caching on the server side. And especially if you're doing some JavaScript bundling on your server side, or even if you have static files on your server, it's always better to load them to the server memory and serve them from memory, because this always will be faster than reading from disk. And of course, use content delivery network, because when you're using stuff like jQuery, it's always better if user can request this from CDN that is closer to them, or you can just deploy to all Azure regions. However, the benefit of CDN is if you're using jQuery from some CDN your browser can already have cached this from using other site that is using the same CDN, because jQuery is hosted in a lot of places around, right? Another thing, gzip compression. So this can improve your size a lot. So like, for example, there is this website here. Check gzip compression. And on my blog, I am hosting my blog on Azure, and I have gzip turned on. And here you can see that thanks to my gzip, I'm able to limit my size by 70%. So then again, you know, if I add it to my small page, I'll be able to get another, it'll be like 30 times size, right? So 3 minutes, 30 times, 1 hour and a half, right? So I'll enjoy the internet for 1 hour and a half on my train. So I'll be able to probably go from Brisbane to Gold Coast and back in 4 hours, right? So that's pretty cool. And also if you have some resources like icons on your site, don't use JPEGs or PNG. Consider using SVGs, especially if you use the same icon in different resolutions. It's much better to use SVGs, and you can bundle them also together in similar way as you bundle your JavaScript or you bundle your CSS, because SVGs are vector images, and many times they are smaller than your PNGs or JPEGs. We are using SVGs for all icons across Azure portal. If you guys been at the Troy Hunt session yesterday about how he built his how I've been pound site, he mentioned that the HTTPS is actually faster than HTTP. And why is that? Is if you go, he has a blog post about that, but let me actually go to his blog post. So the reason of that is that when you run HTTP1, you can have this 6 concurrent connections, right? But now the HTTP 2 is coming up. But as you can see on this website, HTTP versus HTTPS, so this comparison, so this is HTTP, and whoa, it's taking some time. Whoa, over 10 seconds. It's trying like 360 unique images. Let's see how long it will take. Okay, 14 seconds. And now if I try the same using HTTPS, it's 1.5, 89% faster, right? So why this is happening? This is explained actually here. So they are using HTTP using version 1.1 and HTTPS using protocol HTTP2. So you might think that they are cheating, right? Because they're using HTTP protocol 2 when using HTTPS and HTTP1 when using HTTP. But the thing is, if I go to caniuse.com and you say HTTPS, sorry, or TLS, HTTP2, boom, all right? So here you can see that every browser supports this, right? But there are this small annotation that it only supports HTTP2 over TLS. So it means that you can take advantage of HTTP2, but you have to use the secure layer, right? So unintuitively, when you make your site secure, you also can make your site faster. All right. And of course, write performant JavaScript. This is a large project. This is a place where we can gain a lot. The basic things in this case is cache your variables. So like, for example, when you do some objects lookup, don't do them over and over. Just cache them in one object. And also you can cache the functions. So let me show you this. Somewhere here I have one piece of code. Code. Nope. Demo. Oh yeah, this one, unmanified JS. Okay, let me close this, let me close that, and this, okay, one more time. Okay, here it is. So so in this code, I have some object called my application, which has a lot of nested objects inside, and then later on, I am looking up you know, some property of this nested object, but I am looking it up here, I am looking it up here and here, right? So let me copy this and go to minify.js and I'll paste it here. I'll compress JavaScript and this is my output. I'll open Notepad to show you how many bytes is that. So here you can see I have 344 bytes, okay? This minified code. But now I will do one improvement here. So instead of doing this, I'll cache this variable. I'll say var user settings equals, and I'll use this cached variable here, and this will help not only performance, but also code size. So now I will compress that. We had 344, right? And now we gain 40 bytes by doing this very simple trick. And also we gain performance because every time when we use this code, we don't use this nested objects lookup. We just use the cached variable. And you can do the same with functions. So for example, if you use knockout, you know, in knockout, when you create observable, you say, oh, ko.observable, blah, right? But what you are doing here, you're doing object lookup, and every time when you minify this code, you will have ko.observable. But what you can do here, so when I have, let's say, when I have three things like that, didn't want to save that, and I compress it, you can see here I have ko observable. So what I can do is I can say var ko observable and say ko observable here. I'm caching this function and then I replace this, that, and that, and I compress. And you can see here that I am not looking up this function again. I'm using the cached function, which again will help my performance and my code size at the same time. And as a bonus tricks, things that we learned over last year, more or less, and that we applied and helped our performance is, for example, prefetching. What is prefetching is specifying links to the resources that you will need in the future and tell browsers to load them in the idle time. So, for example, you know, in my small example, when I was loading jQuery underscore and video.js, I could say, hey, please prefetch for me underscore, because I am like 80% sure that every user that will come to my website will click this get people and they will need underscore eventually. So if I say use prefetching, I will load my my site very fast, and then browser will start prefetching this underscore library in the middle when I am about to click, or before I click when I'm browsing the website. And then once I click, it will I will have underscore loaded already. And also different browsers do it in different way. Some browsers, they don't even do it when the connection is slow. So for example, if you are on a 4G connection, that might not do prefetching because they know that you are on your phone and you maybe want to save data. And there's a great article about different ways to prefetch your scripts at cssTricks.com. So you can check out this this link if you're interested in that, because you can not only prefetch your DNS. So if you know that you will be getting resources from some different site, you can resolve this DNS before you start getting scripts, which again will give you some time. Here's the standard prefetching. There are some sub-resources. You can also pre-render entire pages. So what this is doing is actually loading your entire page in hidden tab in the browser. And then once user click, you have it right away. So a very cool article. I encourage you to check it out. Another thing that we did over last year, we implemented batch calls. What is batch calls for us is because in our case, we do usually a few requests to the same backend at the time. Like, for example, when we display the list of Azure resources, we want to get the status of 10 or 20 resources that are displayed, right? So then what usually you have to do, you have to do request per resource. Give me status of this, give me status of that, give me status of this, right? But what we did, we batched these calls and we are saying like, hey, please do this 10 different requests in one call. And what we gained here is when you are doing the request to different domain, first you need to do one request with type options that is checking whether your this different backend is supporting cores. And after this options request, you can do the actual request, right? So which means per one actual API request, you need to do two, right? If you batch calls, you just do one options request and then one actual post or put or get request. And of course you save space on the HTTP request headers and so on. But you know, this approach, it has to be implemented on your backend and it has to be implemented on your front end. You have to do some protocol, you have to parse this URL and extract it on your backend. So it's a little bit of work and it only makes sense if you're doing calls to the same backend in a series. So another thing which we're starting, because we are using iframes to have this sort of distributed microservices front end, and the disadvantage of iframe is that they're running on the same thread that the main page. But now we are moving to use web workers that are supported in most of the modern browsers, because when the project was starting, I think i9 does not support web workers yet. So web workers works in a similar way that iframes, but in web worker, you cannot have any DOM operations. We are not doing it anyway, but sometimes you can, you know, take it, like you can do some rendering in the hidden iframe and then send pre-render HTML. In web worker, you cannot do that because you can only execute the JavaScript. But the benefit here is that it runs in separate thread, right? So this will, if you load 10 different web workers, it will give you a lot of performance benefit. And you know, when you think about performance, at the end, what you have to do when you run out of every different trick you did is you just try and playing with different approaches, right? You're like, okay, there's this thing we could do. I don't know if it's going to help. Maybe it will, maybe it will not. So you do this change and you add a lot of telemetry to measure whether this change actually helped or not. And then you keep it like that or you just revert this change and try a different thing. And this is what we are doing every day now. And we are adding different and different improvements. You know, this series of different tips and tricks, you know, my list is growing. So, and of course the technologies are also changing. So we need to keep eye on this and make sure that you also measure everything you do. So another challenge we have is fighting regressions. Because, you know, again, large project, what happened, one person do change, they break something that they were not aware they could break. And the first thing to have in this case is, of course, unit tests, right? There's no way we could survive without that, even if we have TypeScript, that is sort of our first unit test. But without having unit tests, large project cannot exist. And also, it's very important that if you detect the bug and before you start fixing it, it's very good to first add unit tests to make sure that this, you know, bug repro, this test fails, and then you fix the bug, make sure your test is green, and this will not happen again. And in addition to unit tests, you also need to have integration tests, because you know, every component can be working separately, but they might not work together. So our integration tests are Selenium tests that are testing UI. And again, we try to have sort of this approach to testing, that we have a lot of unit tests and less UI tests, because the UI tests are expensive. You have to load entire page and then do these clicks, wait for actions. Sometimes there are networks calls, sometimes there are not. And unit tests can be executed in like 10 or 100 milliseconds. And again, in our case, our very first unit test is TypeScript. So we don't have to write this unit test checking that some APIs are existing or not. TypeScript are doing a lot for us. And also make sure that you run your tests in different browsers. So currently we run our unit tests in all browsers. We run Selenium tests only in Chrome for now, because again, they're expensive. They take a lot of time, they take a lot of resources, and you want to get feedback as soon as possible. So, you know, in some very edge cases, some UI tests can break across the browsers, but it's not very, very big issue. We don't support all browsers version in the past. We are very fortunate that our customers are developers, so we support only the latest version of IE. We support the latest version of every other browser. And of course, we will not break you if we could, but you know, if we would like to support IE6, then I don't think it will be possible to run the portal today. Nice surprise. So this is my friend's Tesla car, and at some point, the Azure portal was working there. I'm not sure what's the current state because I didn't get from him the update. This is like about a year ago. And then you actually could see your telemetry there. You actually could see the beautiful Azure Regions map. So it was pretty cool. And at the end, let me go back to our like technology stack, because as I mentioned, like our project started like 4 years ago, and this technology stack was chosen 4 years ago. To you know get back and make changes now, it's not possible. But I think what I will throw here, if we are starting this project today, what we would do. So probably instead of Knockout, we'd go with Aurelia. Have you guys heard about Aurelia framework? All right, like 30%, great. I'll talk more about Aurelia in my later TypeScript talk. So if you're interested in that, please come. Now hipsters moved from Require.js to Webpack. And Webpack is actually pretty cool because it can replace both Require.js and Gulp for you. It can watch for your changes. It can bundle. It can defer loading and do stuff like that. And the community is growing, and most of the people are using Webpack right now. Less is great. SaaS is also great. Maybe we'll change this. Maybe we'll keep less. I don't know. This is like an alternative. And if you like look on the internet, they're very similar. There's similar number of usage, but this is like an option. So if you're starting a new project, you can consider one of these. I think we would definitely switch from QUnit and sign on to Jasmine, because Jasmine is like all-in-one testing framework. So you don't have to have separate mocking library. And again, the community support for Jasmine is much larger right now. And of course, as you know, ASP.NET Core is coming, and its performance is better than the ASP.NET MVC 5, because you don't have to load entire .NET framework. You can only run this smaller version of a framework called ASP.NET Core. And as I mentioned at the beginning, I would definitely go with XUnit, which is a great framework. I really like it. It allows you, for example, doing test cases. So like if you want to test one logic but with different parameters, you can just have one method. In MS test, you unfortunately have to have one method and then like private methods with different test cases, which results in one test, which is not very cool. And also, there is better replacement for MockU called nsubstitute. It has very nice APIs, and it's very intuitive. So again, I recommend you to check this out if you're considering starting a new web app project. So at the beginning, I showed you the few things on the Azure portal. And if you are interested in stuff like that, you can go to aka.ms/Azure Portal Tips and Tricks. This is a series of short videos that I recorded in a conference room in Microsoft, where I am showing different things that you might not be aware of, like, you know, changing themes, customizing your dashboard, multiple dashboards, sharing dashboards, stuff like that. And if you have any feedback about that, please let me know. And also, if you have any feedback for a portal, please go to aka.ms/Azure Portal Feedback. As you can see here, let me actually go to the site now. We are really keeping attention on that. So Azure Portal Feedback. And as a proof that we are really paying attention for that, you can see if you go to here, if you click on status, you can see that we completed 453 user requests. And now if you can see here, we started on top one request, we started on top two, also top three, top four and five are under review. So please go here, please vote, please add new ideas if you have some. We are looking at this every day and we really appreciate your feedback. And also one of the greatest things I learned working with Azure Portal team is being data driven. I think our team is doing it very good in such a way that we have telemetry on almost everything. So now we are in this model that if you want to do some change, if you want to do something, everybody is telling you, hey, do you have data for that? Like, for example, hey, I think we should switch, you know, this top menu to this one, right? And then somebody is asking, like, hey, do you have some data? Why we should do this change, right? And then somebody's coming up, oh, because, you know, people are not really using it and we have telemetry on that. And we see that, you know, people are starting clicking that and then they cannot really figure out what step next. So let's first try this. And then usually what we do, we don't do it for all users. We do A-B testing. So for example, we do it for 30% users and then we compare our telemetries. And if we see that the users are being successful in the new approach, then we change this approach. And we do this with most of our changes right now. We look at the customer feedback, like for example, people and give us a different feedback about, for example, the browse menu, that A, we would like to have it sorted A to Z, or it would be nice if you put like the top services on top. So then we did a change. We added another tab that you can switch between A to Z sorting to top services first sorting. And then again, we run telemetry. We've seen that people actually going to browse and clicking right away on the top services, and this is a good improvement. So I really recommend you to apply this to your projects, to add telemetry as much as you can, and then make your decisions on the telemetry, not on just your intuition, because you know that can go sideways. So thank you very much for coming to my session, and please go to evaluation. I think if you go to the site, you can go to the session, you can click evaluate. I would really appreciate your feedback. And I think my manager would also really appreciate your feedback, because then he will know that I didn't come here to just waste 5 days of development time when I could write the code, because I'm a software engineer, I'm writing code, I am not a project manager or marketing person. So to make sure I come back here or I will go to other conferences, really appreciate your feedback. And if you're interested more in TypeScript, please come to my session today at 5. And also you can find me in the speaker lounge. I'm not sure where it is yet, but I'll find out soon. And thank you very much and have a great rest of the conference.